Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. Informed, intelligent, irreverent, political persuasions with Mike O'Mara and Chris Frakes. And now, here's Mike.
Welcome to another episode of Political Persuasions, ladies and gentlemen, the show where I rant and rave, and then Mr. Frakes tries to bring me back to earth and calm me down, and sometimes he succeeds, sometimes he doesn't succeed, but all in all, it ends up being an interesting discussion, and none better than last week, Mr. Frakes. It was a stimulating program.
I feel like people tune in just to see if I can rein you in or not, right? Like, it's like, will he or won't he? How turked up is Mike this week?
if we can do a flashback to last week's show, let me give you one of Chris Frakes' best quotes from last week's show. Here we go. It goes like this.
Oh,
I know that I can be a tad exasperating, but you know, we live, in my humble opinion, in exasperating times. It is very, very frustrating, and you know, it came to a head last week, but we love doing this show. It's still a lot of fun. I'm very proud. I should tell you this. I'm very proud of doing the show with you. Because when I talk about it to people, I always like tout your incredible credentials, that you're kind of an insider, right?
Sure. So yeah. I mean, I guess that's right.
You know the way the game works. I don't. I'm out here. I was never invited to a party when I worked in Washington, D.C. They didn't bring me into it. I think we went to one embassy party in my entire radio career, and that was because we knew somebody that got us in. But we were not the Cokie Roberts, Sam Donaldson, Ben Bradley, inside the Beltway folk. So I've always had it from the outside looking in, and it's just fascinates me. It does.
I think that's why we do the show, because it's not a bunch of insiders talking to each other. I mean, when people ask me, well, what do you do? I say, you know, I host a show with Mike O'Mara, and I say it's kind of like a shock jock and a Washington insider walking into a bar. And like, that's kind of how I talk about it. And I think that's the vibe we try to bring to folks.
Well, the situation this week, Chris and I were talking before the show. We go over kind of what we're going to discuss. And as far as the news cycles, the narratives that are coming out of D.C. this week, you just can't get away from the gun situation and the shooting in Parkland, Florida, because it's top of mind. And it's top of mind, Chris, because the kids got involved, and these amazingly articulate and intelligent kids from Douglas High School down here in South Florida have really taken over the news. Yeah. And I think that culminating last night with the town hall meeting hosted by Jake Tapper on your former network, where they brought the two sitting senators from Florida. They brought the county sheriff in. They brought the Dana Loesch, the spokesperson for the NRA.
But how do you feel about her?
We'll get to it. But it was the kids more than anything else. And here's what's great about it, in my opinion. These kids, through this unimaginable tragedy, are having... Some of these kids are having a moment. They're having their moment, and they're taking advantage of it. And I have some cautious optimism that, unlike previous shootings in this country, that maybe they will be able to effect some change. That said, a bunch of them rolled up to Tallahassee, and the Republican-controlled legislature in the state of Florida quickly eliminated the need to even debate an assault weapon ban. And it's just a question of how much this will have, how much traction they will have, whether this will have legs. I root for these kids, and I also just feel incredibly proud. Here's something different. Of my home state.
There you go.
Because and I know I'm all over the place on this, but I ask you, how amazing would it be if a movement started where we had sensible regulations that would prevent some of this crap from happening in America? What would it be if it happened from Florida? If it started from the gun-toting, sidearm, walk into your local bar, shoot your buddy for looking at your cross-eyed state of Florida. What? How amazing would it be if this movement started in this state? I think it's really fascinating to watch this. I'm fascinated by it.
I mean, I agree with you, Mike, here. I believe that children are our future. We teach them well, and we'll let them lead the way.
Are you doing a Whitney Houston song? What the hell is wrong with you?
It's a beautiful song.
I believe the children are our future. I played that on the radio years ago. That's how old I am. I remember that, you know.
But in all seriousness, what I love about these kids is, you know, they're unadulterated. They speak from the heart. Even in that town hall on CNN recently, we saw these kids talk in a way, you know, when you do town halls with politicians and you have the adults, you know, the voters ask questions, the voters, you know, kind of mimic what they hear on cable television, right? And these kids just talked like real people, and they're like, yo, are you going to stop taking money from the NRA? And, you know, Senator Rubio.
I was watching it last night, and that was the moment of the town hall. And it was now there's another thing I wanted to throw in here, because I watched the entire thing, and the kids, Chris, they're kids now. Right. Now I'm not diminishing them in any way, but they are kids, and they tend to have at least in the audience, they had their questions kind of prepared and their statements, and it was not necessarily a perfect give and take, because sometimes the listening didn't happen on the part of the kids, and sometimes they were saying things that weren't right for that particular. For example, they asked Senator Bill Nelson about whether he was taking money from the NRA. They got it wrong with that. But because of that, you also get the raw stuff you're talking about,
right,
where they've got a raw situation and they do speak from the heart. And then, you know, what's lost in it to me watching this town hall meeting is at some point you forget for a second just what they have experienced,
right,
especially the parents and the brothers and the sisters, I mean, the people that are still alive there.
To be so composed so soon after such a horrific event is...
I think they might still be in shock, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that, and I'm no, you know, I'm no psychologist, but that sounds about right. But to your point about, you know, the make my day state of Florida kind of starting to generate a groundswell for gun control, I think that is true. But as you also pointed out, you know, those kids got a really fast political education. About 400 of them were bussed up to Tallahassee.
Yep.
They sat in a gallery. Democrats tried to bring a couple of bills that were languishing in committee without a vote onto the floor, and that was defeated. I think that's probably what you're going to see, you know, from a lot of state legislatures, particularly in a gun, you know, culture state like Florida. What's interesting, we talked about this last week, and I have, we got a, shocking no one, Mike, we got a lot of reader mail here, right? From our show.
Love the reader mail. We love the viewer mail. The listener mail.
The listener.
Not reader mail. It's not. Do I sound okay, Rob? Is it okay? Yeah. I just want to make sure. So we got some listener mail. We got some listener mail on this particular topic. I can't imagine why.
Yeah.
Not like we were screaming.
It wasn't like you were screaming or shouting at all. ever.
All right, what do we got?
Well, we have a number of folks, but to the point of kind of the kids, there was some talk about moms demand action on gun sense in America. And one of our listeners, Stephen Grooms, says, you know, see, this is a way forward for change. I know people want to believe the NRA has so much power because of their deep pockets. Maybe, but they also have over 5 million members. You're battling votes, not money. People that want change need to come together. And I think we talk a lot about the NRA's money, and we did last week. And I think Stephen raises a great point, and one that I would like to make and echo, that though that those dollars are also backed up by votes. And so when, you know, a guy like Marco Rubio stands on a stage to talk about gun safety, and he kind of moved publicly yesterday in a way that I've not seen him before.
Yeah, with the magazines,
the magazines,
the large capacity magazines.
Right. And I think, you know, we're coming to a point where there is more organization, and this does take a number of years. It took a number of years for the guns rights folks to get their ducks in a row. Now you're seeing with every town, moms demand action. If moms are as successful at If the mom's movement can be as successful at drunken driving, remember they basically, Mothers Against mm-hmm. Drunk Driving? I mean, they right. basically eradicated and put into place laws across the country to try to prevent drunk driving. If they bring that same model to gun control, I think that's right. that would be a paradigm shift, and you would start to see you have to have the votes follow. And that's the thing that I wonder, Mike, you know, does the gun issue become a voting issue? Because when you look at the polls, and we talked about this last week, people do tend to, by wide majorities, want background checks. They do want, to limit the number of rounds in a magazine. But it's not an issue that you necessarily pull the lever for, you know, because you're thinking about jobs and the economy. That is, I think, the challenge of these gun rights group is to make I'm it interested. A voting I'm, issue.
And I agree with you on that. And I wonder sometimes if it could be, because, sometimes I think isn't the greatest success of the NRA that these politicians on the other side, in many cases Democrats, are running against people. They don't make the gun control issue top of mind, especially in predominantly red states, because they're brainwashed to think, well, they can't make that an issue. It's going to damage them at the polls.
Right.
And I ask you this question. You kind of said it before, but is it 50-50? How much is the NRA's money and how much is it their voting? Is it equal? Or in many cases, are these politicians more afraid of the votes that the NRA brings to the table than losing some political contributions?
I don't think it's ever about the political contributions. The money helps you get the votes out. Right. So because they have so much money, they can talk to their voters. They can get them out. They can get them mobilized and say, hey, this senator wants to take your guns. Get out there in that primary. Show them who's boss. And that is hugely powerful. So it is the mobilization of the voters. That's when I talk about NRA money. I talk about their ability, their ground game, and the resources they have to organize those votes. But to your point, you know, are we seeing a sea change here? Quinnipiac had a poll out this week, and it showed that American voters support stricter gun laws, 66-31%, the highest level of support ever measured by this poll. They go with a couple of different solutions that have been on the table for years now, since I can think all the way back to Sandy Hook, universal background checks. It's 97-2%. Including 97-3% among gun owners. So that
which is, and
I mean, so that's basically everybody's like, yeah, sure, do a universal background check.
I mean, and statistically, when you're talking about the margin of error, that is basically everybody in the country feeling the same way about this. And the congressman, I'm sorry I don't have his name, last night at the town hall meeting indicated that this is a sprint now. And I welcome your thoughts on this. Do you believe that? That this is the type of thing when Congress gets back in session next week, when they come back into Washington, that this is the kind of legislation they have to strike while the iron is hot? Or is it something where they just have to, a la the gun rights people, get better organized and continue to keep the pedal to the metal? I think it might be a combination of both.
I think you have to
hit while the iron's hot for some of this stuff, but then you just have to continue. I think it could be. Look, I'm somebody who votes on the left. I'm somebody who has been a Democrat for most of my life. I'm somebody that if I heard, especially in this current climate, that there was a particular congressional candidate, say, or a state legislative candidate that was running on a platform of gun reform, of sensible gun regulation, I'd pull the lever for that. I don't know if I'm alone or whether I'm, on the fringe. I don't think I am. But that, to me, especially with the current climate and when, and parents that are out there, I think it could be. I think you could run a successful campaign, not making it the single issue, but making it a prominent issue. I think you could see that. And if that were to happen, my question to you is, don't you think that at least congressional candidates and state candidates running on that platform, don't you think that would make it more of a significant issue nationally?
Absolutely. It becomes, you do need the momentum there, and you see leaders on gun control trying to make that case. In fact, one of our listeners, Scott Spindler, flagged this quote from Dianne Feinstein, of course, the California senator, who said the assault weapons ban was effective. When the ban was in place, the number of gun massacres fell by 37%. The number of people dying from gun massacres fell by 43%. Republicans blocked the extension of the ban. We're fighting to reinstate it. You know, we talked a little bit about that. I have not checked her numbers, but it, taking them at face value, hopefully they're right. That tracks, you know, that has support. We talked last week and I didn't have the polling numbers. I do this week. I came prepared. 67% of people favor a nationwide ban on the sale of assault rifles. So that is a huge, you know, that is a huge voting population. That's a huge majority. 83% want a mandatory waiting period for all gun purchases because 67% of people say it's too easy to buy a gun in the United States today. So, you know, those kinds of pieces, I think, are starting to come together in a way that if it's marshaled, because I do think you need the sprint. We saw the sprint. Remember, Mike, we saw the sprint after Newtown, right? Mm-hmm. We had this background check debate. We had a magazine, you know, limiting the rounds in a magazine debate. That failed. It didn't get through Congress.
It's
but now you have the president. You have it's President
incredible.
Trump, who was an absolutist on the Second Amendment, saying, I want to ban bump stocks. I want to cap magazines. I want background checks. That was exactly what Barack Obama was saying. Barack Obama did something very similar and brought people together at the White House. What he didn't do, and I'll give Donald Trump credit for this, he didn't hold it live. You know, Donald Trump let every parent stand up to him this week and say,
"There is no
what are you doing?
There is no way that even someone who's not a Donald Trump supporter like me, where you don't say good move on the part of the president." I think It was one of the best moments of his presidency, and I do not think that that is going to be lost on him and the people in his administration. The question is, once the 7-day period is over with our you know, toddler attention span in the United States, whether that will, you know, will they still be able to do this? And that's what I wonder about. That's what I worry about. And when I saw Dana Loesch, who is the spokesperson for the NRA, show up at this rally about guns, that to me is progress, because the NRA has been incredibly successful at doing the silent treatment after these shootings and just you know, maintaining their relationships with their legislators and conducting business as usual.
I think it's really interesting to watch where Donald Trump goes with this, because I think he could have a real leadership moment here.
Could be a moment.
And he could be hailed as a hero for bucking, you know, conventional wisdom on what Republicans would do on this. They are pretty small things. You know, you're not talking about an assault weapons ban, but you're talking about, you know, fixes that would make things safer. And those are steps in the right direction. He would be lauded for that, because he would be moving a ball that has been stuck under President Obama for 8 years. He right. loves to see that. And you have, you know, support from Republicans on this. But when you look, when you drill down in that Quinnipiac poll a little bit further, Mike, here's where it gets complicated for Republicans. Only 34% of Republicans say they support stricter gun laws. So 60% oppose them, and 43% support the assault weapons ban. So that's when, you know, you have these kind of bigger numbers for the population. Mm-hmm. But then when you talk about the base and who's voting in a primary, that's where it gets dangerous for these guys. Because, you know, these are folks who, remember, they're doing fundraisers at like shooting ranges, right? It's like bourbon, cigars, and guns.
Right.
Like, come on by and, you know, let's have an evening. That's the culture. So I think that gets difficult.
The culture that I think in large part has been created by the NRA and their propaganda machine that is just, you know, been, that, you know, these are arguments that, and I get them all the time. I mean, I get them probably more than any other political argument that comes my way on social media when I talk about guns, because I've talked about guns before. And you get these talking points, and it is, you talk about organizing the moms that are organizing for the anti-gun folks. It's stunning how successful the gun rights organizations have been, specifically the NRA, in ingraining their talking points into the brains of people that are into, you know, are like-minded. It's stunning. You hear these same talking, guns don't kill people, people kill people. That was, how much money did they spend to get that in people's brain? It's permanent. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me, when you give me those statistics about the Republicans that don't want assault weapons bans, you're this is for years, decades of the NRA successfully, I don't want to say brainwashing, I think that's too dramatic a term, but getting their message into the hearts and minds of their followers. And it's a tough thing to overcome. And unfortunately, Chris, I have to say this, that when I look at this, and you're talking about the Republican Party, that if you're like me and you're out there thinking this particular issue, assault weapons ban, something that I would just think is pure and simple common sense, but you still have the potential of primarying a United States congressman or senator on the Republican Party, and you're going to get him out of there on this particular issue. It tells me one thing and one thing only. We have to get Democrats back in office that can, or we're not going to get any of this stuff. It's just not going to be done. And someone brought up a point that under when the House and the Senate were controlled by Democrats, they weren't successful then. And they like to talk about that as a positive when the fact is the Republicans filibustered it, and that's why it didn't go through. So I mean, I look at this and I say, yeah, short term, Donald Trump, great that he had everybody there. Short term, Donald Trump, fantastic that he may be thinking about the bump stocks, and you got Marco Rubio changing his position about magazines. But ultimately, long term, if you want what I want, which is never again, that's what I want. And I'm with that. I think you have to get new blood in there. It has to happen.
Right.
And this time, they have to get the numbers. Otherwise, that's just the way it's going to be.
That's just the way it's going to be. And going back to where you started that point, which was the NRA being very successful in messaging, I think that the Every Towns and the Moms for Sensible Gun Policy, they need to work on their messaging. And they have one of the most potent messages available, which is
right.
Protect our children, right?
Right.
And
right.
I think that is, and the Newtown folks have tried to do that, but I think they're with the kids out there now talking about this, it kind of puts a face to it in a way that I think could be the beginning of a much stronger, more consistent message. So, and that's where the NRA doesn't want to go, right?
That's
as you pointed out.
You, I agree with you so much.
You pointed out that it was like, oh, it's mental health. And then if gun control folks come back and say, mental health, sure, but kids' safety, for sure. And always made it about the kids and made it about how are we, is that going to protect our kids? Is that enough? And
yeah,
I think that is the argument that has to be had, and you don't hear it.
You bring up a great point about messaging in politics in America. And that is, I don't think you can ever go simple enough. And have we ever had a better example of that than the presidential election with a red hat with white lettering on it that I saw at a Harley dealership just last week, Make America Great Again. And the fact is that you are right. And let me tell you what I think the problem is with left-wing groups and gun control groups and Democratic policies and Democratic politics, I should say. You really have trouble with messaging, because there's one thing that I noticed. You get somebody, and even in the town hall last night, you get somebody who I agree with, where we want the same thing, but they want to hear themselves talk. They want to hear, they want you to know how smart they are. And I think that's unfortunately the problem with the Democratic Party.
So hang on, Mike, you hit this on the head. I was having this conversation with some a former Obama administration official, Democratic consultants at lunch yesterday, and one of them said, you know, we always got to be the smartest kids in the room.
Right.
And that so here's our laundry list of prescriptions for all that ails America. Instead of being like, protect our kids, protect our kids, save
protect our
children,
kids.
Protect our kids, no
how
more
about,
dead kids.
How about simpler? Guns kill children.
Guns kill children. Right. I mean,
guns kill children.
But the repetition
is not. What if you put that on a bumper sticker? You know, I mean, it really would be. But no, and believe me, I have always, when someone made me aware of this maybe 10, 15 years ago, it just rang true with me. And with people that I travel with, you know, that I travel in the circles with Democrats, and it always seems like that they just want to tell you, you know, what's the rap from the right quite often with Democrats is that all they want to do is talk. And they get that because they do want to bloviate and they want to continue with that. And I think, boy, when you talk about messaging, especially in this day and age, we have to accept the fact that I think we're a dumber country than we were. back in the day. I really believe that. We have to realize that you got to make the messages simple.
I actually
simple.
Don't know if we're dumber. I think.
Let me tell you. I watched local news last night, Chris Freitz, and they had a series of break-ins in Cape Coral, and they had three or four men on the streets. And I said, I have a four-year-old sleeping in the bedroom down there that can articulate his point about what happened on his street better than the 16 adults that they had.
But I just think we see more men on the street than we ever did before. I mean,
you're probably
you
right.
know, so it
probably
just right. seems like we're getting I dumber. But you know, remember, like, and I've made this point before. You know. The political debates of our past, the Lincoln Douglas debates, were just excuses for dudes to come drink because the political parties brought the beer, and so people right. showed up to listen. And so it's not like we're
better informed. I think we. I don't know whether we're more knowledgeable than
yes,
we.
Yes, I you know, we were, and who knows? But I always think, and I've always argued as a communicator, that the simplest message is the best message, and it's the one that sticks. And that's And that is one I think that people who are listening to us also echoed. Mike, I heard from @crow1138, and he says,
"I love him."
So he loves no, you. I don't that's know. Why. That's
oh, he loves me.
He loves
oh,
really? You.
Uh-oh. I don't know whether he's telling me the truth or not. Let's lay it on me. I'm not sure.
He says the individual liberty argument is. Well, BS. We'll censor it here. I'm sure there are CEOs who think it's an infringement on their rights that they can't pollute, or business owners who want to keep minorities out of their stores. I agree with Mike. And then he says to me, you and everyone else in the media who argue that you have to advocate for the other side because everything has to be fair and balanced plays into the hands of the NRA and the GOP. Enough. Sometimes positions are wrong. So I would say to our friend at @crow1138 that...
that sounded very British Parliament.
I would say to the distinguished gentleman from @crow338...
the distinguished gentleman from Twitter... he's saying, well, you're making a false equivalency. I'm not endorsing that argument. I think it's important to reflect that there are those arguments. He believes, as you do, that that's the right argument, and that to bring up the opposing argument is somehow false equivalency. But I would say to Mr. @crow that that is out there, and that's part of the context that you have to take into consideration. So I respectfully disagree with his media criticism.
Well, let me and listen. This is not the same kind of discussion we were having last week, and I will tell you that, you know, you brought it up. Tallahassee. We had an example this week. Mm-hmm. You go look at Tallahassee. If you think that what you're saying last week to me, where you're talking about the other side, and you have to understand that there's a loyal opposition here. Your point was proven this week. I don't have to like it, but it's true. It's out there. I accept the fact. And I don't know. I don't know what the motivations are. I don't think the enemy, I shouldn't say the enemy. I don't think that the people with opposing political viewpoints, that was a Freudian slip when I referred to them as the enemy of our children and our country. That was a Freudian slip on my part. I don't think people that support the Second Amendment in all its forms are necessarily doing so thinking that I don't think they're evil. I don't know what their motivations are. And I think that also people that say the gun control advocates, the Democrats, people on the left, tend to just put labels on people from the right and try to play amateur psychologist and figure out why they're doing what they're doing. What I ultimately think is you've had a narrative put out by the NRA for years and years and years and years that I think now has gotten into the consciousness of a lot of people. And right. a lot of people think that that's the way it is. I don't know what their motivations are other than that, and I don't try to. What I do believe is this, and I think it's important to point out, I do believe that statistics have shown worldwide and within our own country that if you get some of this crap off the street, if you do that, you're going to have better results. We're going to have less of these shootings. I just believe that. That's it. I'm not talking about anything about my team winning politically or anything. I'm talking about this one issue. And that's why, once again, I get back to the fact that I think I'd like to see some people run on this particular issue. I'd love to see it. I don't know if it would work in a red state, especially my county in Florida, Lee County, one of the reddest counties, if mm-hmm. not the reddest county in the state of Florida, but I'd like to see it. And you don't hear this side of the state. You don't hear the Tallahassee area. You don't hear the people up in the Panhandle. You're not hearing that part of the state. I'd like to see what happens. It's interesting.
Well, it really and to that point of somebody on the other side, they also hit me on Twitter. Mr. Nicholas Marr says, I totally get why you were getting frustrated during the latest Political Persuasions podcast. I had to turn it off halfway through. Reminded me too much of non-gun control related arguments I used to have with my ex-girlfriend. and then I
that's
told
why her, she's that's why she's your ex-girlfriend.
Oh,
pal.
Nick. Wow. And so so then I told him, hey, you should listen because there's a payoff for you at the end because we had mailbagged him last week.
Yes.
And so he turned it back on and he said,
we got normal at the end.
Right. He said, thanks for the shout out. I think it was Mike telling you the NRA would love you that got me pissed off on your behalf.
Well, know what? He's not the first person that has gotten pissed off on me, and probably more than any other issue.
I like that he was pissed off on my behalf, Mike. That's what I like.
That's wonderful. A lot of people were. A lot of people were pissed off for you. I'm happy for them, too. The fact is that a lot of people get pissed off on this particular subject. They get mad at me. And, I don't, once again, I can't crawl into their heads.
Right. But Mike,
I don't know what it is, but it's hard for me to get my head around it.
But then on the other side, Tracy Greer Danoff says, Mike, thank you. I learned so much from PP and I appreciate how passionate you are about the safety of children. So to the point, that was kind of the mix and they're on all sides and our listeners are on all sides. And when you said to me last week, well, what would you do, Freights? I think one of the things I would do, and I think it should have bipartisan support because, unless you're anti-facts, which I guess there are some politicians who are anti-facts, the CDC.
Well, one in the White House in particular.
Thank you. The Centers for Disease Control have been prevented, I think for the last 20 years from studying any research on gun safety, gun fatalities, and gun use. So we as a country have said, let's not let the Centers for Disease Control that cares about public health study what guns do to our public health. And I think that would be a great place to start. And I would like to see people get, be against that. Show me how you can be against studies, facts, and research to then say, okay, well, here are the facts as we know them. So how do we then create policies to address those problems? That seems like a pretty good starting point to me.
Yeah, well, you got to look at who voted against that and, who's prevented that from happening. And you're talking about people. This is a fact. People that are in the pocket of the NRA. You got no better example of that than at the high point of the town hall meeting on CNN last night over in Sunrise, Florida, when the brother of a murdered student in Parkland actually cornered Marco Rubio and said, would you agree to not take money from the NRA? And that moment, more than any other moment at this town hall meeting, the hall erupted at that moment, because the fact is, as somebody who just thinks that advocating for gun manufacturers is killing our children, and that's what I believe with all of my soul, that the fact that they're doing this is resulting in more guns on the street, less regulations on guns, more guns getting in the hands of people that do horrible things. Marco Rubio, with all his slippery slickness, tried to answer this, but there was no way to do it. You can't look at me and say they buy into my agenda. That's not true. I don't believe
that. It was not a good line. I agree
with you. It was not an insensitive line. As a matter of fact, I would go so far as to say the spokesperson for the NRA, Dana Loesch, who was out there giving the talking points of the NRA and trying to make it on mental health and then trying to throw the police under the bus and the FBI under the bus and everybody else except that piece of hardware that the kid had in his hand. It just, to me, there was a tiny bit of arrogance. Do I respect them for going in front of those kids and their families and all the families in Parkland that lost loved ones? I respect them for showing up. I do. But at the same time, I perceive from both Rubio and Dana Loesch that they were just in there hunkering down, going to get their high fives. You handled yourself really, really well. And in the particular case of Miss Loesch, or Losh, or whatever the hell her name is at the NRA, there was an arrogance that came through from her, and there was an insensitivity that came through, not with her words, but with her demeanor. And the fact that she just robotically spewed the NRA talking points in a room where might not have been a good place to do that. Now, people that are on the other side of this issue will disagree with me forever, but I was looking at her, and what I think I felt greater empathy for the parents and the siblings over there and the students that are in this high school, where I just wanted to scream at the top of my lungs, Chris, and this is how I feel again. I wanted to just go, it's about the guns. It's about the guns. And I think nothing that has changed my mind about
it. And when
that.
You get back to the messaging, Mike, I think that's where gun control advocates have to be. I think they have to be on, it's about the guns and it's about the dead children. I think that is, and that's where you need to be, and that's where you need to continue to return to if you're going to fight that battle.
You know, I'm not arrogant enough to think that the way I think, as far as Democrats and people on the left, is the way they all think. I really don't know. I have no idea whether the message would work or not. But I sure think that that got me passionate. That got me wanting to be more active. And who knows? Because ultimately, look, I just want to see a change that will prevent this. It's just insane to me that we even debate this, and when I get back down to it, I'm like, why are we debating it? And there's no other way I can look at it that we're debating this, because it's money. It's money, and it's politics, and it's money and politics.
Well, and it also, and not to repeat where we got, you know, I don't want to go down the same rabbit hole.
I know. I don't want to do it again.
But it is about those things, but it's also about, it's about rights and liberties and regulation of the government over your behavior versus not regulation. I mean, it gets to those core issues well. And the core issues on the other side are safety and security for everyone versus the individual rights of others. And that's always the clash in our society. And that is what feeds this guns piece. But I do want to move on a little bit, because we had a lot of other stuff happening this week.
Russia investigation still going on.
Yeah.
Can I ask you about this? Because the way I look at this, this is what I think is happening. Nobody really knows, because Mueller's team has been remarkably skillful at covering their tracks a little bit. You know, you see the indictments come down, you see that what gets out, you know, there's not the kind of leaking that we've had in other investigations. I will ask you this. I get the sense, Chris, that ultimately a giant shoe is going to drop, and it's going to drop because, once again, money, that they are going to tie some of this money to the inner circle of Donald Trump. I have no idea, because I get confused if I look at it too close. I really, really do.
It is confusing.
Dumb DJ brain.
And I think to your point about this indictment, 13 indictments came down against Russians who meddled in our election. And that, to me, read like a messaging document for Robert Mueller, who was saying, you may hear that there is nothing to this Russia meddling. You may hear that that's fake news, but let me hand you indictments and evidence to buttress what we've heard from the intelligence community, which is Russia's, you know, Russia has been at this since 2014. Here is the network that did everything from Twitter bots and trolls to organizing rallies for Donald Trump during the 2016 election. And then you saw, you know, the president, you know, cherry pick pieces out of that and say, oh, see, it was happening since 2014, had nothing to do with me. But the fact of the matter is, Donald Trump, his campaign was being assisted. He wasn't colluding with the Russians. There was no evidence of that in this indictment. And you know what's interesting to me? The other piece of this that it was a little undercovered, I thought, and should get more scrutiny, because, you know, he is a front runner for the Democratic nomination, is Bernie Sanders. I mean, what we heard, you know, because that indictment said that the Russians helped Sanders and Trump. So they're the two populists, the two disruptors, the two folks who would, you know, they didn't want Hillary Clinton, for sure. They knew that, you know, because Hillary Clinton had been tough on Russia. Putin didn't want her. So he was essentially empowering and trolling on behalf of these other two campaigns. Bernie Sanders made exactly the same kind of argument that Donald Trump did, which was, you know, oh, we didn't have anything to do with this. They, you know, it's Hillary Clinton's fault. And, you know, we wash our hands of any involvement, you know, not kind of living up to the fact that, oh, yeah, we were also helped. We didn't ask for that help, but it happened. And we need to get to the bottom of this. They took a very Trumpian line on this. Jeff Weaver, his campaign manager, and Sanders himself. that was fascinating to me.
Yeah, and I think the word that comes to mind is unwitting. And, you know, yeah. you at least with these indictments, that the Trump organization and perhaps the Sanders organization unwittingly assisted Russia in their attempts to disrupt our election. I you know, nothing has come down so far that would indicate that there are charges that are going to come forward with any of the members of the inner circle. What you do hear about, though, are little things like Jared Kushner and his property in New York City that right. has fallen on extremely hard financial
you
times.
You mean 666 Fifth Avenue, Mike?
Yeah, 666 Fifth Avenue, where this guy's hurting for money. And when you're talking about the money, that's what you've heard since this investigation began.
And we saw members of the Kushner family essentially tying their relationship to Jerry Kushner when they were pitching investors in China, I think it was.
Yeah.
And that was inappropriate, and they were
Red China, Chris. Red China.
Red China. And now this week,
China, Red China.
This week we also have Donald Trump going to India. And giving a foreign policy speech, putting out an ad in a newspaper.
Donald Trump Jr.
Donald Trump Jr. Hey, invest in some Trump properties here in India. Sit down for $38,000 with a dinner for me. You know, put a down payment on a condo in a country, you know, where it is normal that you would, you know, you mix business and politics. You know, the Indian politics is also closely tied to Indian business. So if you wanted to be close to the prime minister, you might invest in one of his family's properties.
Did he have time to go on an endangered cobra hunt or anything when he was over there?
I did not see him in an orange vest and a rifle. No pheasant hunting in India.
I might dislike him more than his daddy. There's just something about him that it's the missteps.
Is it the hair?
It's the retweets. It's the fact that, you know, when the kids are shot, he'll basically have some retweet of a conspiracy website and a lot of that. I forgot the name of the conservative pundit who, I guess when the legislature decided they weren't going to vote on bringing an assault weapons ban to the floor, when they voted that down, there was a conservative that said, adults win. That kind of insensitivity to the right. fact that these kids are getting politically active.
Well,
Donald Trump Jr. has demonstrated that kind of insensitivity throughout the entire deal, I think.
When you speak about conspiracy theories, one of the ones that
I sounded like 80 years old just like, this whole deal.
This whole deal.
And now this, he's got that deal. We were talking about it at Denny's. It was just. When you talk about conspiracy theories, one of the ones that has blown my mind is these are all child actors, right? They just go from shooting site to say I was hit by this. And so Wolf Blitzer asked one of these kids, what do you say to these conspiracy theorists? And when the kid answered, no lie, said, well, I'll tell you what, if they had seen me in our production of Fiddler on the Roof, they would know nobody would pay me to act. And I just thought, like,
they're so smart.
Zing. Like, I was like, dude, what wit, what, like, what top of mind ability to react? I was
out
so
of this
smart.
Tragedy, you know, the future, if anybody worries about it, you know, and it's, I think it's very, very popular for grown-ups, all of us grown-ups to say, the kids today. I am stunningly optimistic about the future. I'm really, really looking forward to that. And when I look at Donald Trump Jr., his generation, I'm not so excited about that.
Wash Donald Trump's generation in the same paintbrush here.
Because you know, talking about Donald Trump Jr.'s
Us Xers are not all, you know.
Hey, you know what? There are plenty of people that are Donald Trump Jr.'s age that have done wonderful things for the United States.
Well, that's
America,
what I like
sure.
to hear.
There you go. I'm sorry. Thanks for getting me back on track.
Like Chris Freitz and Rob Spiewak.
Yes, absolutely. Salute to you. God bless America and God bless both of you, man. I don't like to hear Donald Trump. I wouldn't want him to be speaking to a moose lodge, much less giving a foreign speech in India.
And the question there is, you know, it gets really muddy of, you know, he's a private citizen. He can do it. He can go raise money. You know, there's no, he's not speaking for America or on behalf of the administration, but, you know,
it's not ethical.
Well, that's the question. You know, is that appropriate? There's no laws against it. But certainly it's, as the Trumps often do, rubs right up against that line.
Yeah, and that's ultimately a line when we talk about the Russia investigation that may come back and bite this administration.
To your
point,
they are very much. It was interesting to see Donald Trump. This was a few months ago. He did an interview with the New York Times and said it's a red line if the special prosecutor looks into our finances. Well, you know for sure he's looking into the finances. I mean, that's what these guys do. To your point, they follow the money. I think that is what has them most worried. Is the money laundering that was happening with Paul Manafort. Afford his campaign chairman and one of his aides, Rick Gates, and they've already been indicted on that money laundering. How deep does that go? Certainly Manafort is separate from Trump, but you have to figure that they're also looking into those kinds of things in the Trump family.
Well, we will have to wait and see. And when this all comes down, and who knows, nobody can predict when that's going to happen. You'll never know. We have one letter. We have time for just a couple of more before we get out of here.
We got mailbag. A couple mailbag things
before we get out of here.
That are not necessarily gun related.
Gun related?
Yeah. We have, they are on the gun episode. We have a new listener, Jason Selvage, who says, great episode on the gun tragedy. Loved your passion on that show, Mike, and love Chris's responses. I'm hooked already. Jason, thank you for listening. We very much appreciate it. Also, we have at Levon1234 says, Political Persuasions episode 10, a tough role, I'm sure, but needed. Keep going. Don't stop. Agree with your co-host, but we'll never get there that way. And then finally, we have Stephen Herendez, who says, best political podcast on any medium. Chris Freites is my hero. Well, thank you, Stephen. I love you back.
Hey, and that's the one he ends with. Cue the music. I'll give him that. Cue the music. Chris Freites is somebody's hero, okay? That works for me. I'm fine. And, who knows what next week will bring. Lots going on. Always lots to talk about. Keep the correspondence coming. We love getting the feedback from you. And we like the fact that more and more of you are listening to Political Persuasions. He's Chris Freites. I'm Mike O'Mara. He's very calm. I'm very emotional. That's the way it works. Join us next week for another episode of Political Persuasions.
Tell all the people that you see, follow me.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Political Persuasions. If you have a comment or question for Political Persuasions, please send it to @Freites on Twitter. That's F-R-A-T-E-S. Thank you. You can download Political Persuasions on iTunes, MikeOMaraShow.com, Stitcher, and wherever fine podcasts are found.
We're gonna pick up everyone.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.